Welcome to the Books of Titans podcast, where I seek truth in the world's great books. I'm your host, Eric Rostad, coming to you from the beautiful Books of Titans studio in Franklin, Tennessee. My goal is to read 200 of the great books over the next 10 years and share what I'm learning. I'll talk a bit about each book, tie ideas together from a variety of genres, and share the one thing I always hope to remember from each of the great books. Today, I'm going to cover The Atrahasis. This was book 16 for my 2023 reading list, and it's book 5 for my overall great books reading list. Well, I read this in conjunction with the Enuma Elish, and the Enuma Elish is the Babylonian creation epic, and I covered that on a recent episode of the podcast. The Atrahasis is the flood or the deluge story. So these two are usually connected if you get a book of ancient Mesopotamian myths or Babylonian myths or stories, you'll often have these together, the epic creation, the Enuma Elish, and then the Atrahasis. So today is the Atrahasis, and whereas the Enuma Elish was like the first lines of the story, Enuma Elish in the ancient language, the Atrahasis is the actual name of the main human being in the flood story. So that's what kicks us off here. You'll hear a lot of similarities if you're familiar with the flood story that's found in the Bible with Noah. There are also some important differences. So there's similarities to that story, but also some important differences. So I'll cover those in this episode. And just real quick, the Atrahasis is made up of three different tablets. And so I want to just start off and kind of go through the epic and give you the basic overview of the story. So I'm going to read from the Atrahasis, the very beginning, just so you get an idea of what's involved here. And this is a translation by Stephanie Daly. When the gods, instead of man, did the work, bore the loads, the gods' load was too great, the work too hard, the trouble too much. The great Anunnaki made the Igigi carry the workload sevenfold. And then I'll stop there. They go through a list of some of the gods, and so that kicks things off. So you notice that first line there, that when the gods instead of man did the work and bore the loads. So the gods at this time were doing the work, and there were gods kind of up above, and then there were gods below, like on Earth, and the Igigi were the gods on Earth, and they were kind of known as the new gods, and then the Anunnaki were the older gods. And the Igigi, who are doing the work on Earth, they start acting like spoiled millennial teenagers, and they start rebelling because they just don't want to do the work anymore. So they've been digging canals, they've been doing these grand projects on Earth, and they're sick of it, they're tired. So they rebel. And the gods plan, this set of Igigi, the gods that are upset about having to do the work, their plan is to have this midwife named Mami or Nintu create primeval man in order to let man bear the load of the gods. So again, they're sick of the work, so they want to create man in order to offload this work onto mankind. So just, you know, basics here. This is the reason for the creation of man in this epic, is to take the workload off of the gods. Next up, a god has to be slaughtered in order to make this happen, and the god's name is Ilawela. And then Nintu, that midwife of the gods, what she does is mixes the blood of this god that has been sacrificed and mixes that blood with clay to create mankind. I want to read a few lines here, and this comes on page 16 of the Stephanie Daly translation. And this is just three lines. I have relieved you of your hard work. I have imposed your load on man, and you have bestowed noise on mankind. So I'll stop the quote there. So you've got this. Mankind has now been created, and the workload has been transferred from the gods to man, but the gods have bestowed noise on mankind. And this is an important concept, because this comes up quite a bit. You get these series of scenes. There are at least three where the god Elil, the head of the Igigi, he gets fed up with the noise that these new humans are making, these new people who are set to do the work. He gets fed up with the noise because he can't sleep. And so he comes up with these different methods to get rid of people who are making the noise. So there's these various catastrophes, and the first one is disease. And then let me read how this set of series goes. It usually starts something like this. And the country became too wide, the people too numerous. The country was as noisy as a bellowing bull. The god grew restless at their racket. Elil had to listen to their noise. He addressed the great gods. The noise of mankind has become too much. I am losing sleep over their racket. Give the order that disease shall break out. And I'll end the quote there. So you have these scenes come up where Elil, the main god of the newer gods, the Igigi, he just gets fed up with the noise. And it's, I mean, I just think this is so humorous and funny in a way. He then kills a bunch of people, but the reason for it is just, it's like a father who gets fed up with their kids making too much noise. He's sitting on the chair reading the newspaper, like, shut up, kids, I'm reading the paper. You just get that sense. So it's a common feeling of like, hey, I just want it to be quiet. But the gods wanted the people there to do the work for them, but then they get fed up with the noise that they're making. So Elil first does this disease to get rid of people, and then he sends a famine, and then he does another one where he sends disease again. But it gets to the point where these aren't doing the job correctly. So now we get into tablet two. Again, this is a three tablet set here. And so at the end of tablet two, the gods begin talking about a more comprehensive genocidal plan against mankind, which is making too much noise. And this time they come up with a flood. And Elil, he's that main god again, of the Igigi. He is the one that's always upset about the noise. And what he tries to do is get Enki, who is also called Ea. He tries to get Ea to give birth to a flood. And I'm going to call Enki Ea the rest of the time because Ea connects very closely to the Gilgamesh story. And we're also introduced to Atrahasis around this time, the man. And this man has direct connection with that god Ea. And Atrahasis, when Elil is sending these destructions, these diseases and the famines, it's always Atrahasis who is kind of the spokesperson for the people who approaches Ea and says, how can we get this to stop? We're dying. What do we need to do to stop this? And Ea always helps. And so now let's move into tablet three. Elil has told this plan of a flood, and Ea has heard about it. So Ea has the god has this connection with Atrahasis, the man. And so Ea tells Atrahasis about this coming flood, and he tells him to dismantle your house and build a boat. So, you know, take apart the wood of the house and build this boat. And this is where lines from the Atrahasis and Gilgamesh connect very, very closely and almost exact at some points. So Ea warns Atrahasis, and then Atrahasis builds an ark. He places his family in this ark and then animals as well in order to save the animals. Well, so this flood comes and wipes out all of humanity except for Atrahasis and his family and the animals aboard. Elil, that main god, he does not know that there is a remnant of people. He does not know that Ea has told Atrahasis to make this ark. And so when he finds out, he gets very upset. But there's also this unintended consequence of the flood in that there are no people to do the work, but also there's no people to make the sacrifices. And the idea is that when a sacrifice of an animal is made and it's burnt, that smoke goes up to the gods, and that is how they are fed. And now you've wiped out the people. There are no sacrifices. So this sets the gods in an uproar. You know, why did we get rid of all the people? Now we don't have food. We don't have the sacrifices coming to us. And so once Elil realizes that there are a few people that are remaining, he sets these limits in motion going forward. I'm gonna read some of these limitations. So before, you have the strong sense in a number of the flood stories that before the flood, people did not have limits to their lifespan. And so you would have these lifespans of centuries. But then after the flood, the lifespans are cut down. There's reduced birth rate. There's fixed number of years, that type of thing. So let me read towards the end of tablet three here. Sometimes mankind will be reduced from facing warfare. And through these means, his numbers will not burgeon. Through these means, man will not become too powerful. Let it be that humankind not be allowed to live eternally, but only for a duration of time, a fixed number of years. This will be the manner of life for all of mankind. Let there be no fixed duration for death, but only for life. And thus, there will not be so many humans upon the earth. There must only be enough to perform the works of gods. Let him live his life in joy and misery for his brief lifespan. And then it goes on from there. I'll stop reading there. That was the Timothy Stephanie translation of that part. So there's now this limit to how long mankind can live. And so that's the overview here of the Atrahasis and what happens therein. I read a couple different versions of this. The first one I read is the Timothy Stephanie translation, and this comes in a book called Enuma Elish, the Babylonian Creation Epic, also includes Atrahasis, the first great flood myth. So it's just these two stories, the Enuma Elish and the Atrahasis. So in the previous episode where I covered the Enuma Elish, this is where I first came across it in this book. It's a very short book, just containing those two stories. I also got another translation, and I just got this last week, but this is a couple weeks ago, I guess. This is called Myths from Mesopotamia, and it contains the Creation Epic, the Flood, the Gilgamesh Epic, and then others. And this is a translation done by Stephanie Daly. And this is the Oxford World's Classics version. Now, there's benefits and to both of these. If you're just reading it for the first time, I would suggest the Timothy Stephanie version, just because he it's just a straight up translation. He doesn't, if we're missing part of it, I think he just kind of tries to fill it in. So I don't know if it's as true to the text as Stephanie Daly's, because if we're missing the marks or missing the text, she just, like, there's no text there. She just leaves it out and doesn't try to fill it in. The Stephanie Daly version with the Oxford World's Classics, it's very robust. The introductions are fantastic. So if you're looking to do a deeper dive, I would definitely get that version. I'll link to both of them in the show notes. But I've really enjoyed this Oxford World's Classics one. And then just to have the Gilgamesh epic right there and to be able to flip back and forth and see the similarities between the flood story in Gilgamesh and the Atrahasis was fantastic. There's also end notes. There's not a whole lot of notes in the Timothy Stephanie version. Both had good introductions. Timothy Stephanie's introduction kind of connects more with how this relates to the Bible, whereas Stephanie Daly's connects more with how it relates to other ancient texts of the time. So I'd suggest both if you want to go into this, but I got a lot out of that Stephanie Daly version. So I have two segments remaining in this episode. In the next segment, I'm just going to cover a few things that stuck out to me, really in connection with other literature and in the flood story connecting with other literature. And then after that, I will get into the one thing, my one key takeaway from the Atrahasis. Well, I became utterly fascinated with this flood story last year, and in reading the Enuma Elish, well, first in reading Gilgamesh and just seeing the flood story in Gilgamesh, that shocked me. Gilgamesh was the first book I read for the Great Books Project. And to see the flood story there, I was aware that there were other flood stories, but I'd never read any others other than the Noah story. So to see a flood story that was probably 1,000 years before the Noah story, and to see a number of similarities, That got me on this trail of wanting to know more. And then as I've been reading Greek literature, as I've been reading other ancient literature, I've seen the myth, the flood, the deluge myth come up over and over again. And so it just warrants a number of questions of did everyone know of this story? Was there this huge flood that everyone wrote about? Was there some sort of a survivor that made it through this flood? Was there one story that was kind of shared amongst others through trade or whatever, or did everyone experience it? Why are there the differences? Why are there the differences in the story, perhaps the reason for the flood, as opposed to what happens after the flood or what even happens during the flood? So I just became very interested in this, got some other books that that kind of delved into this, and it continues to be a question that I want to dig deeper into. And so reading the Atrahasis is a very good starting point for that, and digging in deeper to that. So I mentioned that both of these books had an introduction. I would suggest reading those just for deeper insight. And then also to read the Atrahasis in connection to Gilgamesh, because you do have the flood story in Gilgamesh. There, the Atrahasis name is a different, it's a different name, but it is connected, and I'll get into that in the next segment. But the connections between this story and others, especially in Gilgamesh, is just fascinating. I did want to cover very quickly just some similarities and differences in the Atrahasis and the Genesis flood story. So in the Atrahasis, the flood is 7 days and seven nights. In the book of Genesis with Noah, it is 40 days and 40 nights. In the Atrahasis, once the waters subside, Atrahasis sends out a dove, then a swallow, and then a raven. In Genesis, Noah sends out a raven and then three doves. And then let's go back to the reason for the flood. So in Atrahasis, it's because mankind is making too much noise. The gods can't sleep, and so they need to wipe out mankind. In Genesis, it's because of the wickedness of mankind. That is the reason for the flood. So you can keep going with this. You can look at the ramifications afterwards. What happened afterwards? But in both cases, there was a, you know, this is not going to happen again. The gods will not do this again. But there's different ramifications afterwards for the flood. So I encourage you to dig deep into this and do some more research. But it's just been absolutely fascinating for me. So I want to highlight the thing that absolutely blew my mind in reading through the Atrahasis this time. All right, in segment two, I mentioned that I was just fascinated by this flood story being in so many different civilizations and ancient texts. And yesterday I came across, in preparation for this episode, in the introduction to the Stephanie Daly version of the myths of Mesopotamia, not only is there this connection between a number of civilizations with the story itself, but there is a close connection with the name of the survivor in these stories. And so this is my one thing. This has absolutely blown my mind. And so I'm just going to go through some of the names that you find in these deluge stories and the name of the survivor, the name of the man that leads the survival of the people through the flood. So first we have Atrahasis, the name of the survivor in this Babylonian flood story. In Gilgamesh, his name is Unapushtim. And sorry for scholars out there, I'm going to butcher these names, but Unapushtim is the Akkadian version of that name, and that's what we see in Gilgamesh. And so there's a close connection. Atrahasis and the name in Gilgamesh, it's just the Akkadian version. In Sumerian, that name is Ziasudra. And then let's move forward to Berosus, who has this book called Babylonica, and the work is lost, but we have some fragments and references to it. And that name is Zisuthros, and that's a phonetic rendering of Ziasudra from the Sumerian. Now, here's the connection that has utterly blown my mind. In Homer, it has been suggested that the name Odysseus comes from a Hittite translation of the meaning of Atrahasis, which the meaning of that name is the far distant. And so it's been suggested that the name Odysseus comes from a Hittite translation of the far distant, which would connect it directly to Atrahasis. And then in the Arabian Nights, there's a name Al-Kidr, which is an abbreviation of Atrahasis. So now, you know, moving forward to the Arabian Nights, which will be a book on this Great Books Reading Project as well. There is a connection there. Now the Odysseus connection was that's the one that blew my mind when I read that last night, because in an upcoming podcast, I'm going to be covering the Greek epic fragments. And in that, we have the Trojan epic cycle, which the Iliad and the Odyssey are part of that. So it's a eight-work cycle, eight works in that. And then the Iliad and the Odyssey are books 2 and 7 in that. But there's a first book in that, and it's been lost to us. So 6 of the books are lost, and then we just have the Iliad and the Odyssey remaining. The first book in that is called the Cypria. And it describes, part of it describes Zeus's plan to control overpopulation by means of setting up wars. And one of those wars is the Trojan War. So instead of there being a flood, there is a war. There's this Trojan War. And then we read about that war in part of that war in the Iliad. And so if you view it in that, with a connection between Atrahas, the survivor of the flood, and you look at Odysseus would have been a survivor of this mass extermination done through the Trojan War at the will of Zeus. And you see that directly at the beginning of the Iliad, the will of Zeus is being worked out. Is that will this idea of a mass extermination, but through a war? So Odysseus is the survivor. Atrahasis is the survivor. Noah is the survivor. I'll be digging deeper into this, but wow. Not only you have this deluge story, but the survivor, the name of the survivor, connects across ancient literature. That is just amazing. That has blown my mind. And that is my one thing for this book. So to recap, this is the first great flood myth. You will see this come up in other ancient texts. You'll see it in the Bible. You'll see it in the Noah story. And so what do you do with this? Was this a story that was just passed along and then other people kind of, reworked it to fit what they wanted to come across? Or was there some big flood in the past that it was wiped out? In Gilgamesh, you get the idea that knowledge was lost that we had before that there were perhaps this time of advanced people that were completely wiped out. And so you've got clay tablets where this knowledge was stored, but then you've got that idea mentioned in segment one that people were made out of clay. And so a flood can gets rid of people by killing them, but then it also gets rid of these clay tablets, because the one thing that can destroy clay is water. And so you've got people wiped out, but you've also got this knowledge, this deep knowledge that was wiped out by the flood. So did anyone survive this flood? Were there people like Atrahasis and Noah in Odysseus that survived these attempts of the gods to wipe out humanity? It's a fascinating question and an interesting little nugget that you can take to study further. I loved that this tied so many of those pieces together. So not only the story, but then also the names of the people. If you do want to dig into this further, there's a book I read last year called Ea's Duplicity in the Gilgamesh Flood Story. And this is by Martin Worthington. And he goes into just this idea of, because in the Gilgamesh story, the warning of the coming flood is very opaque. And you're like, what does this mean? Does it mean that a blessing is coming, or does it mean that there's a cataclysmic event coming? And so Martin digs deep into that. That's a fun book if you're looking to dig deeper into this idea. So I will be returning here soon next week with the Greek epic fragments, and I can't wait to dig into those. That again is the Trojan epic cycle of these eight works. So what happened in these other works? We don't have them in full. We have a lot of references to them, but it really kind of fills in some of the gaps of the story before, during, in the middle of, and then after the Iliad and the Odyssey. So be sure to check in to that one. The book I'm currently reading right now is the Aeschylus, the Oresteia, and that has just been incredible. I'm going to read it 3 times through, because it's quite short and it is the first reading, I just needed to get the lay of the land. And so I wasn't able to really focus on it other than just to get the story down. So that was my first reading. The second reading, I'm going to dig a little deeper with the same translation as the first time. And then the third time, I'm going to read the Robert Fagel's translation, but then his introduction as well before that. So I really want to dig deep into this one, and that is what I'm currently doing. So I'll have an episode about that coming up as well. So I'm currently in the Greek tragedy writers. That will probably be the next month or two of going through them. All right, that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you for listening. I would love to hear from you if you have kind of dug down this rabbit hole of the flood stories across ancient stories, ancient texts, ancient myths. So email me at eric@booksoftitans if you have some other knowledge about this, if you have something to share that has likewise blown your mind. I would love to hear about that. I will link to the two versions of this story that I read in the show notes. And you can follow Books of Titans on Instagram or Twitter, just at Books of Titans. And then please go to the website, sign up for my newsletter. I send that out at least once a month, sometimes even more. And you can sign up for that at booksoftitans.com. I also have all of my reading lists all the way back to 2017 and my great books reading list there as well. That is a work in progress. If you go to that list and you see that I'm missing a book, please let me know. I am trying to read everything that is considered a great book, but I'm trying to limit it to around 200 works. So I'm starting from the oldest and going to the newest. I don't want anything within that was written within the last 50 years. So please help me fulfill that list. And I'm also looking for books that help me to understand the great books. So if you know of a book that gives some insight either to the topic, the author, the time period, the culture, let me know, because I need help picking out those books as well. So until then, next week I'll be back with the Greek epic fragments. And then until then, keep reading, keep learning, and keep listening. I'm out.